This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.
EW to his friends, Eric Wiltshire.
Welcome to Postcard from Potbrad with a special as we look at English speakers abroad. And you can't get a stranger combination than my next guest that is none other than an old radio friend of mine who lives in Bondi Beach. Don't you just hate him, boys and girls? His name is Henry O'Donovan. Welcome to RTI, Henry.
It's my pleasure. And I'll tell you what, I'm already nervous because I'm not used to being on the other end of the microphone.
Why are all radio presenters terrible guests?
Because we're control freaks.
That's what it is. I understand. Yeah, actually, I did that at an exhibition not that long ago where I was due to be on the panel. And the guy that was supposed to be the sort of chairman come MC was ill for some reason and couldn't make it. So I bullied my way into becoming the MC rather than the panellist. And I was my comfort zone was better, Henry.
Yes, I can understand that. I've been a broadcaster myself. I mean, really, you know, I was just saying to my girlfriend before we went to air, I was saying, I'm a bit nervous about this because I'm used to asking the questions. I'm used to controlling the whole thing. And then I've got Eric Wiltshire coming on and I'm not sure what he's going to ask me. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle this. And I think I have to have a glass of wine because after all, it is 9:30 in the evening here.
Are we in Australia, of course? Yes, it is, isn't it? Sorry to keep you up so late at your age, dear boy. anyway, the subject this week of the Postcard from Potbrad special is us English speakers living abroad. And I include Australia in that because under normal circumstances, and I say this with respect to an old school friend of mine who emigrated to Australia, and the last time I saw him when he came back to England, which was many, many years ago now, I couldn't understand a ruddy word he said because he was speaking outback Australian.
I know language. Look, it's funny, you know, if you listen to my accent, it hasn't changed I've been here 23 years. I still have this rather awkward mid-Atlantic accent that you get when you work on broadcasting for so long. I have not taken on the accent of Australia, but I have taken on the slogans of Australia. It's a different thing, you know. But as for you know what, it's funny, we've taken on the Bondi Tunes Network where I work, we've taken on a broadcaster from Dublin in Ireland, and he's got a thick Dublin accent, and I'm from Dublin, and half the time I can't understand some of the people. You know what I mean?
I do.
From my own city.
I know, yeah. Exactly. And it's the same as people where I come from in the east of Bedfordshire in the UK. And they've got a very fast voice. It goes up and down like this all over the place. And a lot of my school friends still talk like that. And I can't understand them on the phone. It's ridiculous.
So just to use an Irish version, since I'm Irish, you talked about the up and down thing. That's a Welsh thing as well. Coast of the UK, and also in Cork in Ireland. Now, I don't understand people from Cork. I cannot understand what they're talking about. We actually have an Irish correspondent on the Bondi Tunes Network who's from Cork, but he's okay because he's done the broadcasting thing.
Oh, right. So he's got rid of that accent thing.
Well, he hasn't got rid of it. He's just refined it so that people around the world can actually understand what he's saying.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's actually, because you've given it so many shameless plugs already, before we get on to the topic of what's it like to be you in Australia, you keep mentioning Bondi Tunes. What the devil is Bondi Tunes?
I'm sorry, that was shameless plugging, wasn't it? I can't help this. That's true. Bondi Tunes is a very strange beast, to be honest with you, Eric. It's a radio show that I do here in Australia, but we have 14 correspondents in about 7 countries who contribute to the show. So we're actually global. We broadcast on FM and FM in Australia and New Zealand, and we also broadcast on both FM, long wave, short wave, medium wave, all over the place in Europe, and of course the internet.
Slow down. Whoa. You're on what in Europe?
Sorry?
What sort of coverage have you got in Europe then?
Well, we're on Spitfire FM, which is an FM station in Southampton.
Right.
We're on Replay Radio, which you'd be familiar about.
Yes.
With. We're on Atlantic Radio in Ireland, a long wave, and sometimes shortwave, and AM.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Pipeline International Radio, which is based in the UK, and that's basically where people can download. It's a podcast kind of station.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very big. It's one of the biggest in the world, in fact. We're on FM in Australia in a small FM frequency in Peak Hill in New South Wales. We're on FM in New Zealand, also a small FM station called World FM on the south end of the north coast of New Zealand. So we're also carried in Canada on FM at 2 in the morning. Don't ask me how that happens, because I wouldn't be able to answer you. We're also on FM in the middle of the day in downtown Madrid in Spain, and again, it's as dodgy as hell, but we're there.
Oh, I love it to bits. Love it to bits.
Well, I hope that answers your question.
Yes, quite. I would have, you know, the succinct version would have been all right, but as it goes, that's fine. And what does Bondi Tunes do then?
Well, I'm really pleased that you're letting me spruik my radio show. I'm delighted about this. We have a number of different outlets. What goes Bondi Tunes 70s Plus, which is obviously 70s music, 80s Plus, 90s Plus. Now, these are 3 one-hour shows with just me, and a couple of my correspondents contribute to them, but they're basically music from those eras, from those decades, 70s, 80s, 90s. And they get aired on all these stations. To you about. We also have a two-hour chat show, which is our main flagship show, and that's where we've got correspondents in Canada, in North Thailand, 4 correspondents in North America, 3 or 4 in Australia, and we've got and 1 in New Zealand. So what the chat show, which is our flagship two-hour show, is all about is people talking to people, talking to people. So I've contributors just sending in stuff to me about what's going on in their region. They may interview singers, writers, people in the arts. Then I've got other contributors who are high-end journalists who interview politicians and do a lot of the serious stuff for our brand. So we're a very mixed bag, not only mixed demographically, because we can't even... I had a major ad agency ask us to, you know, to tell them our audiences, we can't do it, or what our demographic is, because we're broadcast all over the world, and we're mixing with demographics, and we're mixing with age groups. Everything is mixed up. It's a mixed bag. And you know what? I've got to tell you, Eric, this is the new world. There's no longer a specific broadcast agenda to us. Well, there is, I guess, but on our level, it can't be done because we're global.
Yeah, no, I quite... In actual fact, you're very, very... We're getting off the topic again. Here we go. You are very similar in a lot of ways to a lot of the questions that were raised when I worked alongside BBC World Service, in that people would say, how big is the audience, da-da-da-da-da. And you have to measure it in a very different way. But I think that the internet is replacing the old shortwave international broadcasters.
Yes, because it's reaching a global audience, and I guess, you know, if I was interviewing you, I'd be saying to our international audience, I'm sorry, I'm just going to take over this. The thing about it is that, yes, shortwave, of course, was the longest reaching form of transmission around from the 1960s or before, probably. And now we've got the internet, and it's instant, and it's in stereo FM quality anywhere in the world. So I see your connection with shortwave.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, let's get back to the plot a minute, because beforehand you were in Ireland. What the devil made you move to Australia?
Oh, you don't want to know
why?
Okay, I'll tell you.
Thank you.
Well,
that wine's working really well, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm having a lovely glass of wine here, I must say. Are you having a wine at 10 in the morning your time?
No, it's actually 1:30 our time as we do this little bit. I'd better not go on to the... Tokaj is the famous Slovak wine, but I'd better leave that till later, knowing the alcohol content of it.
Fair enough. Well, yeah. I'm having a glass of wine, and it's 20 to 10 in the evening. What happened was I worked on pirate radio back in the early 80s and I worked on about 7-8 different radio stations, which paid me nothing while I worked in McDonald's to actually get money in to pay the rent.
Yeah.
I was in my 20s. Then I got onto the biggest radio station in the country, and I was very lucky and in the right place at the right time. And then in 1987, I moved to the UK. I knew there was something going on with the pirate radio situation in Ireland, and I was actually right. I predicted it. By 1988, the pirate thing was all shut down. So I was living in London. I met a New Zealander, a girl, and I married her. And I said, well, let's go and live in New Zealand. London sucks. And she said, and I can't use the word here, so I'll go, she said, blast New Zealand, we're going to Australia. And I said, that's cool, I can live with that. Yeah. So we came to Australia. And the irony of this, Eric, is that I married a woman from New Zealand and became an Australian citizen.
So you're actually an Aussie citizen now?
Of course, I've been an Aussie citizen after the first 2 years I came here, which is like 21 years ago. I've been an Aussie citizen for 21 years.
Wow.
And, you know, the reason I opted to become a citizen, you couldn't do so until 2 years of living here. The reason I did it is because I heard that if you murdered somebody, they could actually throw you out of the country if you weren't a citizen, if you were just, you know, a resident.
I
thought, well, in case I murder someone, I better become a citizen. And then they can't keep me up.
That's got to be the greatest ever. Oh, marvellous. Now, so what was the biggest culture shock when you got, I mean, coming from Ireland to London is definitely a culture shock, because I know both areas very well. So that's culture shock number one. But when you got to Australia, for goodness sake, it must have been a culture shock times 10.
Not really, and I'll tell you why. Because in the 80s, I actually lived in a lot of countries. I lived in Holland for a year. Mm-hmm. I lived in Israel for 11 months. Now, that was 1983, when it was the most violent year in Israel since the 47 war or whatever back in the 40s. It was a very, very violent year. And the Voice of Peace, and I'm not going to get all anarchy on you here, but there was a ship out in the sea called the Voice of Peace. And I used to listen to that all the time. And I also lived in France for about a year and 2 months. So I already lived in all these countries before I came to Australia. So Australia was a piece of cake for me after Israel.
Yeah, because it's more it's more anglophiled anyway, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, look, it was no big deal. I actually I was working in London, got transferred to an office in Perth, in the west of Australia. And now Perth, after living in London for 2.5 years, Perth was like going into a small town. Perth is the most isolated city in the world.
Right. And
it's a city of about 1 million, at least back in 89 when I arrived. And I said to my girlfriend, we're like just going down the escalator in the city. And I'm thinking, it's a Friday night and we're young. We're in our late 20s, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, there's nothing going on in this bloody city. So I told the job where to shove it and hopped on a plane to Sydney. And that's where I've been ever since.
So what sort of industry were you in at that time?
Well, I had been in the broadcast industry for 10 years, up to the age of 27. When I went to London, I did a stint on the BBC World Service, which...
it's all right, you got over it. You got over it, it's okay.
It's totally illegal what I did. Anyway, I got onto the BBC World Service because I told them I went to Oxford and Eton. I actually told this story to a colleague of yours who I've interviewed for Bondi Tunes. And they realized, well, I did Letter from Scotland, which was a 30-second thing that you read out. And I'm like 28 years old, and I'm in the biggest radio station in the world. BBC World Service is still the biggest radio station in the world. I'm reading out my stuff, and I do it live to air. There was no recording. And then they found out that I didn't go to Eton, and I didn't go to Oxford. And then they fired me.
Oh.
I thought, well, yeah, but it didn't matter. I got on the biggest radio station in the
world. Well, that's true. Yes. Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. Okay. Yeah, but you didn't get sort of sucked into it too much.
Sucked into what?
The World Service.
No.
No.
Look, it was a clunky old operation, but I was very impressed with the BBC World Service because I used to listen to it as a kid, you know, in Ireland, in my bed at night. The BBC is just a brand I loved, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And to be on BBC World Service was fantastic.
Well, I jest slightly, but I have to say my time at Bush House, now lamented as not being there anymore, was probably one of the greatest things for me. And to sort of go into the BBC club in Bush House and pick up your free copy of the Radio Times was equally fun. And I wouldn't have missed it for the world. But I agree with you. It's very, very clunky. And the notion of I did some bits for the media programme on World Service, and they couldn't get their heads around the fact that I didn't want a preordained list of questions and answers.
talk to me about that.
Gee whiz. So anyway, you're now in Australia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
I am. And I'm 23 years in, 24 years on April 15th. I've just checked my old passport.
Okay, so you've now arrived, you've gone from Perth down to Sydney. How were you welcomed in Sydney as you know, the Johnny Foreigner?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. We arrived in Sydney at about 10:30 in the evening. My wife at the time, who was from New Zealand, and that's the reason we could get in Sydney, into Australia, we arrived at 10:30 in the evening. She had never been to Australia before, even though she's from New Zealand. And I met her in London. She'd actually never been to Australia. And this is, and just to let your listeners know, it's a very strange thing. Australians go to the UK before they go to anywhere else in the world, not even New Zealand. Or New Zealanders go to the UK before they even go to friggin' Australia. Australia's next. They go to Europe because that's a right passage of some sort for them.
Well, no, it seems to me, the couple I've spoken to, they still consider it the mother country.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think, maybe at that time, you know, back in the 80s when we did all this in the 80s. But sorry, I forgot your question. What was it?
You despair, don't
see,
you?
See, it's a glass of wine. It'll do it every time, baby.
Right, so how were you received in Sydney? What did they think of you?
We weren't received at all.
Ah.
Because we didn't know anyone. We went into the YWCA, get this, the Young Women's, whatever it's called, Christian Association. YWCA is against the YMCA. Because they allowed married couples. So we're right in the centre of Sydney. And I'm just, you know, we've just arrived in Australia. We'd been in Perth for 3 days, flew to Sydney, and it was all fresh to me. I spent the whole evening watching television and listening to radio because, of course, I'd just been working in radio, and I thought, Australian radio, it's very strange.
Yes.
Very commercial. And television was just absolutely out of this world by comparison to ITV or the BBC. It was so American and so commercial. But in answer to your question, we weren't received at all. We just had to find our way around because we knew no one in this huge city of 40, at the time was 3 million people in Sydney.
So what, when you sort of walked down the street, opened your mouth and said, excuse me, where do I find so-and-so? Were they shocked? Were they warm to you? What was the reaction?
Oh, look, you know what? Australians love the Irish. The English and the Irish have assimilated into Australian culture so well because Australians are made up of the English and the Irish. But the Irish actually assimilate better than English, if you don't mind me saying so. It's just that the Australians are very, very laid back, very, very friendly, very down to earth. In answer to your question, we got, you know, whenever we had to deal with Australians, which we surely had to do within 24 hours of arriving, but just, you know, the night we arrived, it was kind of funny. I wanted a newspaper, and I was right in the center of Sydney CBD and this YWCA place. And I walked out and thought, it's 11 o'clock at night. I walked into a cop station, was like next to us. And I said, do you have a newspaper? And said, yeah, mate. And they gave me this. They just gave me the Sydney Morning Herald. And I said, do you want some money? And I said, no. And where are you from, mate? And I said, well, I'm from Ireland, but I've been living in England, blah, blah, blah. And they said, ah, mate. And I said, you know, And like I was 28, and these cops were really nice to me, and they were as friendly as the Irish would be, or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was our immediate entrance into this, Eric. But you know, as we went on, of course, we both went on and got jobs. And I've got to tell you, having lived in Israel and France and Holland, lived and worked in those three countries. Australia is by far the easiest, ironically, given that it's the furthest away.
Okay, what's the ease? What's the really plus big plus points of being in Sydney?
Now or then?
Now.
Well, that's a very good question. I can give you negative points as well.
I'm sure you would. I knew that was coming. I was trying to help the tourist board here, you know, don't you know?
No, good on you. Yeah. I tell you what, the positive points of living in Sydney or in Australia, actually, I prefer to say Australia as a whole, is the fact that we have a thriving economy. We didn't get any downturn. We didn't have a GFC at all.
Wow.
Money is available. People are available. If you want to do your own enterprise, you can get money out of the banks, unlike many parts of Europe.
Yes.
The weather is fantastic. I mean, really, the weather is fantastic right through winter. I hate summer here, by the way. It drives me nuts. But the winter has been fantastic. It's been like 22 degrees and sunny. I mean, that's, you know, that's even better than the Irish summer was this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the winter, and these are the up things I'm telling you. The people are positive. There's no war. There's no. There really is. It's really hard to find anything bad about this country. But I want to tell you some negative sides as well, if I can.
Mm-hmm.
Negative sides are it's a nanny state. They try and control everything what you do. They remind me of Singapore, even though I've never been there. I've had so many bad stories about Singapore. Shit, this is like Singapore. But the thing is, on the downside, Australia can be really controlling because we have none of all these problems that they have in other countries. They find problems and they try and make us some kind of puritanical society who really annoys the hell out of me. So that's a downside. The other downside to me is in summer, because not particularly in Australia as a whole, but in Sydney, we can get temperatures up to 40 degrees and the humidity up to 93%. Now, I have no problem with the temperature. The humidity does my head in every year, and I keep saying to my girlfriend, let's get the hell out of here this summer. And we try to. It's very hard because, you know, we have to work and do shit. So sorry about the S word. But the thing is, you can edit that out. The thing is, we have to obviously work here, and we live here, and we own properties here, so we have to be here. And I can't complain, though. I don't want to make it sound like I'm whinging. I'm not. I love this country. It's just that they're the only two negative things I can find is the fact that the government tries to control you too much and the weather gets too hot in the summer.
So what do you actually do outside of radio in Australia now? What's your
web design?
And is that still big in Australia then?
Well, it's a global thing. My clients are in Europe.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, it's not Australian local at all. It doesn't have to be because it's digital world, you know, and that's my business. That's what I do. And I have clients all over the world, in America and Britain and Australia, obviously. But, yeah, mostly in the UK, actually, which is kind of strange.
Is that something to do with the cost base of you against the UK, or what do you put that down to?
I put it down to connections. Actually, it's nothing to do with finance. It's nothing to do with money, because you know I'm trying to work out because our dollars now here in Australia is on par with the American dollar.
Mm.
It's got really confusing. I think probably you know when I went to the UK in 2001, just before 9/11. I was also in America just before 9/11. That was scary.
Mm.
I was in the UK and it was like 2/3. So in other words, if something costs 20 cents here, it costs 90 cents or in the UK in our money. So it was three times more expensive. When I went back there in 2009, it was only half. And then when I went back there in February this year, it was less than half. So our dollar has become really strong. So in terms of my clients in the UK, in terms of web design, I would say that it's become more expensive for them now, but it wasn't before. It was dirt cheap.
Okay. But there's still a good living to be made. And what's the job market like in just to wrap up, in Australia? What's, you know, is a high unemployment? What's it like?
This is a good way to wrap up. I've got to tell you, my friend, we have less than 5% unemployment, and it's gone down.
Oh, I hate you.
The reports just came out today that it's only 4.8%. We are the lowest unemployment level rating country in the Western world. The country is thriving. And you know, that's all I got to say. It's all good news. You know, we don't have bad news. We've got, as I said earlier on, we don't have any wars. We have no, it's just all good.
So,
and the weather's good too.
So actually I'm going to move off slightly from where we were, in that regularly on the news bulletins over this side of the world, we get portrayed that there's this huge, almost bun fight between the Aboriginal, which are the original residents of Australia, and the new people, and it's portrayed as something really terrible. Is that not the case?
Look, there are pockets of look that you know. The problem with stuff that happens overseas. Let me just tell you a quick story, and I know that we're stuck for time, but. Yeah. When I came to Australia in 89, people would say, tell us about Northern Ireland, you know, and do people, did you get blown up?
I get your drift, yeah.
And I said, look, mate, I grew up in Dublin. I never saw violence at all in my life. The same thing is reversed with regard to the Aboriginal situation. Yes, there's a problem because the British came over here a very long time ago and put them in chains and did terrible things to them back in up to the 1950s, even the 1970s. But they fixed all that, and very famously, our then Prime Minister Kevin Rudd officially said sorry to what we call the stolen generations. Mm. And Aboriginals have every much the same rights as us. But you know, I was out to Uluru, which is probably better known as Ayers Rock in the centre of Australia, it was a dry state. A dry state, Northern Territory, dry state. Dry state means no alcohol, because the thing about it is Aboriginals can't handle alcohol as well as
you and I.
People.
Yeah,
as well. Yes, as exactly. But there is some chemical imbalance there. But the point is they were shoved down in the gutter for so long by the imperial white governments of Australia back in the 40s and 50s, and they've struggled to get up there. But I've got to tell you, you know, we live in a Labour government here left in rest to look after these people. And I'm sounding like a politician. I don't mean to sound like a politician.
No, let's stop there. Henry, it's been a real privilege to have you on the programme. I'm going to let you have one shameless plug as we come right to the end with 20 seconds to go. Give us the address of the radio station you work for.
It's very easy. Eric, it's www, I love saying those letters, .bonditunes.com.
www.bonditunes.com, and there you will find Henry O'Donovan. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Eric.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.